Ever feel like you're just drowning in information? Like you want the deep insights, but without getting totally bogged down?
Oh, absolutely. You want to understand the cool new stuff, but skip the textbook lecture.
Exactly. Which is why today we're doing a deep dive into something really, well, revolutionary might be the word. Resonant tunneling diodes, RTDs.
And specifically, their photonic applications, how they interact with light. It's cutting-edge stuff.
Yeah, and we're basing this on a brand new, pretty comprehensive book all about RTD photonics. So our mission today
Is to unpack this, right? This quantum-driven tech, show you what it can do, why it's actually really important for future tech.
but in a way that hopefully makes sense, even if you haven't brushed up on your quantum physics lately.
Definitely. Okay, so to really get RTDs, you got to start with the core idea. It's quantum tunneling.
Right, quantum tunneling, which is weird, like not intuitive at all compared to how things work normally.
Totally weird. Think about like an electron hitting a wall, an energy barrier. Classically, if it doesn't have enough energy to get over, it's stuck. Period.
Makes sense. You can't push a car over a hill if you don't push hard enough.
Exactly. But down at the quantum scale, that electron can just appear on the other side.
Like phasing through the wall.
Kind of, yeah. It's like it just tunnels through. There's no real classical way to describe it. It's purely a quantum thing.
Okay, but why? How does that even happen?
It comes down to the wave nature of particles. Electrons aren't just tiny dots, they also act like waves. These wave functions are about probability.
Probability of finding it somewhere.
Precisely. And crucially, part of that wave, that probability, can actually extend into and through the barrier, even if the electron doesn't have the oomph to climb over it classically.
So there's a chance, because it's a wave, it can just sneak through.
Yeah.
That is genuinely hard to wrap your head around.
It is. And here's where it gets even more interesting for RTDs. If you add a second barrier spaced just right,
Wait, wouldn't two barriers make it harder?
you'd think so. But no, at specific energies, the electron wave resonates between the two barriers. Think like a guitar string vibrating strongly at its resonant frequency.
Ah.
This creates a sort of high probability pathway through both barriers. That's the resonant part of resonant tunneling diode.
Got it. So two barriers, carefully placed, actually helps the tunneling. And you need this to happen reliably, right? Especially at room temperature.
Exactly. And that's why the scale is so critical. We're talking the mesoscopic scale. Tiny, like around 10 nanometers.
10 nanometers. Why that specific size? What happens if it's bigger?
Well, size is everything here for preserving the electron's waveness, its phase. Imagine the electron wave has a certain rhythm.
Good.
In these tiny structures, that rhythm stays coherent. It allows the tunneling. But in bigger classical devices, the electron keeps bumping into things, scattering all over the place. It loses that rhythm, the phase gets reset, and the delicate quantum effects just get washed out. It's like trying to hear a whisper in a noisy crowd.
So the small size keeps the quantum whisper clear. And the book mentions something pretty wild about this scale.
Ah, yeah, the barrier widths.
Right, typically around 2 nanometers in RTDs. And that back in the 1990s, this meant they were effectively operating at a 2 nanometer node.
That's right. Which is, a benchmark chip manufacturers are only hitting now, decades later. RTDs were way ahead of the curve in terms of feature size.
That's incredible. It's a huge head start. So, okay, let's talk about the RTD itself, the device.
Right. It's a two-terminal semiconductor device built with these ultra-thin layers, often less than 10 nanometers total.
And the key thing, the really unique behavior, is this negative differential conductance, NDC.
Yes, NDC. That's its signature.
Can you give us an analogy? What does NDC actually feel like, electrically speaking?
Sure. Imagine you're turning up the voltage across a normal device, like a resistor. More voltage, more current flows. Simple positive conductance.
Okay, standard stuff.
With NDC, there's a specific voltage range where, as you increase the voltage, the current actually goes down.
Whoa, okay. Like pressing the gas pedal harder makes
Ah!
the car slow down.
Exactly like that. It's completely counterintuitive from a classical viewpoint.
So what's the point? Why is that useful? A device that fights you when you push it harder.
Ah, but that's the magic. That NDC region isn't just a weird quirk, it means the device has electrical gain.
Game.
Yeah, instead of just consuming power, like a resistor, in that NDC region, it can actually generate AC power, it can amplify signals, or even oscillate on its own.
Generate power.
Now.
Okay, that's a game changer. And you mentioned speed too.
Oh, the speed is staggering. Quantum tunneling itself is incredibly fast. We're talking switching times less than a picosecond.
Less than a picosecond.
Yep. Which allows RTD-based electronic oscillators to hit frequencies up to 1.93 terahertz. That's currently the record for a room temperature single electronic oscillator.
1.93 terahertz. That's nearly 2 trillion cycles per second. That's almost unimaginable speed.
It really is. And that speed, plus the gain from NDC, is what makes them so powerful when you combine them with light.
Right, so let's get into the photonics part. How do these super-fast electrical devices start controlling light, given they're so thin?
Well, you're right. The RTD structure itself is tiny, maybe 10 nanometers thick. It's just a minor blip optically. Their value isn't in interacting with light directly, usually. It's about integrating them with photonic devices like lasers or modulators and lending them that ultra-high-speed switching and high-bandwidth NDC.
Okay, so they provide the electrical engine, basically, like in RTD electroabsorption modulators, RTD EAMs.
Exactly. RTD EAMs are a prime example. Their job is to encode data onto light beams. They do this by rapidly changing the electric field in an optical waveguide.
Flickering the light on and off super fast.
Essentially, yes, modulating its intensity. And they are incredibly efficient. The book quotes figures over 40 gigahertz per volt for the bandwidth to drive voltage ratio. That's for a 10 dB modulation depth.
Okay, 40 gigahertz per volt. What does that mean practically, like for system design?
It means you need very little voltage swing to modulate the light very quickly and significantly. Less than 1 volt peak to peak typically.
Less than a volt
.
Compared to other modulators.
Much lower, yeah.
All right.
Which means lower power consumption, smaller driver circuits. Really important for efficiency and integration.
Makes sense. And these work at key wavelengths, right? Like for fiber optics.
Yep. Material systems like AlGaSGas cover wavelengths around 900 nanometers, and crucially, InGaAs NP systems work right around 1550 nanometers, the sweet spot for telecommunications.
So they fit right into existing infrastructure. And the book also mentioned they can, like, oscillate on their own and modulate light that way.
That's right. Because of the NDC, they can have self-sustained oscillations. So the RTD can directly modulate the optical output without an external signal generator in some cases, and even act as optically controlled radio frequency oscillators. You shine light on it, and it changes the RF oscillation frequency.
Light controlling radio waves.
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay, what about detecting light? RTD photodetectors or RTD PDs?
Right. These use photoconductivity. Light hits the device, creates charge carriers, and increases the electrical conductivity.
But the book highlights their ability to amplify the photocurrent. Huge responsivity numbers, like 3.1 by 104 amps per watt.
Yeah, those numbers are massive. It means they are incredibly sensitive. They can take a tiny amount of light, just a few photons, and produce a relatively large electrical current.
So they have built-in amplification.
Exactly. Right at the detector, which is a big deal compared to standard PAYINE photodiodes where you need separate amplifiers. RTD PDs often work at lower voltages too, maybe around 1 volt or less.
Lower voltage, maybe lower noise, built-in gain.
Yeah.
Sounds way better.
Potentially, yes. They offer a potentially superior bandwidth efficiency product overall, and they can function as these light spike generators.
Spike generator. Like for neurons.
Precisely. Generating short electrical pulses in response to light pulses with nanosecond speeds. Super important for the neuromorphic computing stuff we'll get to.
Okay, holding that thought. What about integrating RTDs with light sources, like lasers and LEDs? RTD-LDs and RTD-LEDs.
Yeah, you can integrate an RTD directly with a laser diode, either sticking them together, hybrid integration, or building them on the same chip monolithic integration.
And the RTD gives the laser.
It adds its negative differential conductance to the laser's electrical input. This can be used to amplify the modulation signal going into the laser, making it easier to modulate the light output at high speeds.
So making the laser respond faster or more strongly?
Kind of, yeah. Amplifying the input signal. And interestingly, they've seen bistability in integrated RTD lasers at low temperatures, around 130 Kelvin.
Bistability, meaning two stable states. Like an optical switch or memory.
Exactly. Useful for digital optical logic or temporary memory. And then there are RTD LEDs.
Right. The book mentioned potentially lower costs and much higher modulation figures of merit. Like M of 4400 versus maybe 6 for normal LEDs. What's M?
M is basically a measure of how well you can modulate the LED's light output at high frequencies. It combines factors like speed and efficiency.
So going from 6 to 4400 is huge.
It's a massive leap. It means you can potentially modulate these RTD LEDs much, much faster and more efficiently than standard LEDs, opening up applications in, say, short-range optical communication or specialized displays.
Wow. Okay. So across-the-board modulation, detection, light generation RTDs are adding serious performance boosts.
Definitely. But maybe the most mind-bending applications are in nonlinear dynamics and mimicking the brain.
This is where it gets really sci-fi, almost. The connection to biology.
It's amazing, actually. There's a historical link. The basic current voltage shape of an RTD, that N-shape curve with the NDC, it looks remarkably similar to the electrical response of a nerve axon, you know, the communication wires in our brains. This similarity was even noted in relation to the Fitzhugh-Nagumo model.
Which is a model of neuron firing. Didn't that relate to Nobel Prize-winning work?
It did. It's a simplified version of the Hodgkin-Huxley model, which won the Nobel. So these tiny semiconductor devices are electrically kind of mimicking how our nerves work.
So we've accidentally built something that behaves like a neuron component. That's incredible.
It makes them fantastic tools for studying complex, nonlinear behaviors. Things that aren't simple cause and effect.
Like what? What kind of complex stuff can they do?
Well, for instance, injection locking and synchronization. You can inject a weak external signal into an RTD oscillator, and it can lock the oscillator's frequency precisely to the input signal.
Making it super stable, useful for timing.
Exactly. Or chaos.
Chaos. Why would you want chaos?
It sounds bad, but controlled chaos can be useful. RTD laser diodes, for example, can be driven into chaotic states, generating these broadband, unpredictable signals.
This is good for
secure communications. If your signal looks like random noise, it's very hard for someone else to intercept and decode.
Ah, clever. And the third one was excitability, like neurons firing.
Yes. This is that all or nothing response. Give it a small push below a threshold, nothing happens. Push it just over the threshold and bang, it fires a full standard pulse, a spike.
And then it needs to recover.
Exactly. There's a refractory period, just like a real neuron before it can fire again. It perfectly mimics that basic neural firing mechanism.
It's like we're building miniature brain components, which leads us to these RTD optoelectronic oscillators, RTD OEOs, the super oscillators. What makes them super?
Okay, so the RTD OEO is this hybrid beast. It uses an RTD photodetector to turn incoming light into an electrical signal.
Right.
That signal then drives maybe another RTD circuit or perhaps an RTD laser diode, which converts the electrical signal back into light.
Okay, light to electricity, electricity back to light.
And critically, there's usually a long loop of optical fiber in there that acts as a delay line and stores energy really efficiently. It creates a feedback loop.
In this whole setup, what does it achieve?
It converts optical energy into incredibly pure microwave signals. The feedback and the high-quality energy storage in the fiber lead to exceptionally low phase noise.
Low phase noise, meaning the signal is very clean, very stable in its timing.
Extremely stable. The book mentions like a 50 dB reduction compared to the RTD, just oscillating freely, and a very high Q factor, meaning it resonates very cleanly, efficiently.
So perfect for generating really precise microwave signals. For radar, communications, timing.
Absolutely. Top tier stuff. And they can do clever tricks like using dual loops of fiber to suppress unwanted frequencies, getting like negative 60 dBc side mode suppression, which is excellent.
But maybe even cooler is using them as regenerative memory. What's that about?
Yeah, this is fascinating because the OEO loop involves detection, amplification from the RTD's NDC, and regeneration back into light. It can essentially store and clean up optical data pulses.
Store them. Like computer memory, but with light.
Kind of. You can circulate optical data patterns, say an 8-bit sequence around the loop.
Yeah.
The RTD components ensure the pulses don't degrade. They get reshaped and boosted each time around.
So it's like a buffer that also cleans up the signal. That could be huge for optical networks.
Exactly. Yeah. Optical buffering, storage, and signal regeneration all in one.
Which brings us squarely to the ultimate goal, maybe. Neuromorphic computing. Using RTDs as artificial neurons.
This is really the bleeding edge. We've seen RTDs can show bustability, like a switch, monostability, like a stable oscillator, and excitability, that neuron-like spiking.
So they have the building blocks of neural behavior.
Precisely. They can emulate these dynamics, Noise can make a bistable RTD hop between states, like some neural models. They can oscillate. And critically, they can generate those sharp spikes in response to input.
And do it fast.
Very fast. The book talks about optically triggering spikes that are only 5.4 nanoseconds wide. That's incredibly quick, much faster than biological neurons.
So you could build networks of these RTD neurons for things like spike-based processing, encoding data in the timing of spikes.
That's the vision. Spiking neural networks, or SNNs. Using RTDs for high-speed spike generation, maybe for storing spike patterns, regenerating spike signals as they travel through a network.
And the advantage would be?
Potential for massive energy efficiency and very compact hardware. Because they inherently behave like neurons electrically, you might not need complex circuits to force silicon to act like a brain. You're starting with something much closer.
Building brain-inspired hardware from the ground up, basically.
That's the idea. Moving beyond just simulating brains on computers towards hardware that computes like a brain.
So wrapping this up.
Yeah.
We went from the weirdness of quantum tunneling.
Yeah, that core effect that lets electrons pass through barriers.
To these tiny RTDs built on the nanometer scale, operating at incredible speeds thanks to that tunneling and their negative differential conductance.
Which gives them gain, allowing them to amplify, oscillate, and drive other devices.
Leading to breakthroughs in photonics, super efficient modulators, ultra-sensitive detectors, enhanced lasers, and LEDs.
And then into these really advanced areas, like creating ultra-pure microwave signals with OEOs, and even mimicking the fundamental firing dynamics of our own brain cells.
It really shows how a fundamental quantum effect, harnessed correctly, can lead to devices with truly surprising capabilities, impacting everything from communication to computing.
And it all comes back to controlling electrons at that tiny mesoscopic scale where their wave nature dominates.
And that final idea, the neuromorphic connection, using devices that intrinsically mimic biological neurons. That feels really profound.
It does. It makes you think, doesn't it? If we can build hardware that processes information using the same dynamics as the brain, excitability, spiking, maybe even chaos, how might that change AI?
Could it lead to machines that learn or adapt more like biological systems?
Yeah.
More efficiently? Perhaps in ways we can't quite predict with current architectures.
It pushes us beyond just making silicon faster. It opens up entirely new paradigms for what computation could even look like, building intelligence based on biological principles, not just simulating it.
A future where our technology doesn't just calculate, but maybe begins to resonate with the principles of life itself. That's definitely something to think about.